Blog Talk Radio.
To think that the new movie Detroit represented a comprehensive look at a terrible event that took place in July of 1967 is only to give credence to a part of a complex story. Yes, see the movie, but realize it's only covering a segment of a citywide episode in Detroit's long history. I was born in a black hospital in Detroit and largely raised in a middle-class neighborhood on the city's west side. My story is what the movie didn't capture, and it opened the closet door of a major metropolitan city at the crossroads of city and civil rights, Vietnam, and unrest everywhere. Today's show is a personal one for me and an opportunity to add layers of truth onto a movie that opened old wounds dating back more than 50 years. Hello, this is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. Thank you so much for listening. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. This is summer. 50 years. Wow. I had to actually go back and check in with my brother and my cousin and check newspaper clippings and listen to some interviews just so that I would get the story straight, because it's the story that you don't necessarily want to remember. Just like I'm sure people who have been in war-torn situations or great tragedies that have been impacted by many people, you don't necessarily want to cling on to those kind of memories. And the Detroit riots of 1967 illustrate that point. But I've done some homework, and this is only going to be the beginning of a conversation, because I believe it should be discussed because of the times that we're in now, what we've actually come through. We've certainly come a long way in 50 years. But there are some nagging truths that just linger in America that I think are worth discussing. That's part of our discussion today. So I'm going to take you back to July of 1967 when I was 13 years old. I would have turned 14 on August 21st and would have marched on ultimately to high school and then graduated. But what was depicted in the movie, and I did go this past weekend with some fellow Detroit friends about my same age category, some a little younger, some a little older. Many of us lived through this experience, and literally we were neighbors, so we lived in the same neighborhood. So what you saw in the movie, and I would encourage you to go see it or rent it, it's pretty gut-wrenching. It's not for children. It's definitely for adults, and it's very hard to watch. But it'll give you the context of that particular incident at that particular motel, the Algiers Motel, which was located on the corner of Virginia Park and Woodward Avenue. The Woodward Avenue is the sort of the cross between the west side of Detroit and the east side. It's the dividing street. It's a very large street in Detroit, and goes from one end of the city, 8 Mile Road, which is the end of Detroit, all the way downtown to what used to be called J.L. Hudson and all the department stores and stores, et cetera. Some are still there. Many are gone at this point. Detroit has had quite a history. It started off in the 1700s, and it marches up. So when I was born in 1953, Detroit was thriving. It had manufacturing galore. So you had Ford, GM, and Chrysler all headquartered in the Detroit area. And with that came the migration of people from all over, not just the country, but all over the world, who came to take stake and move into the city or the nearby areas. And that included black people. And the movie does a fairly nice job of using some, I think it's Jacob Lawrence as the artist that they depicted, showing the great migration of blacks who moved from the South up to the Detroit area for work. So people came to Detroit for work because you could get a job. If you were strong and if you could earn a steady paycheck. It didn't make any difference where you went to school or where you didn't go to school. You could come to Detroit and you could get a job. And you were guild, but you would get a job and join the union and work at Ford Motor Company or one of the other companies for the rest of your life. And you would retire, and by that time you would have had a house and a family and a nice driveway and a backyard and public schools to go to. So that's the Detroit that I knew. But the other component that probably isn't represented in this film, it is a good film, but it's only a partial look at the dynamics that went on in Detroit at that time. So you had the growing tension that was to now be known as the Civil Rights Movement. All of that was in full play in Detroit. In fact, in 1963, in June of 1963, as sort of a warm-up to what happened in August of 1963, Dr. King came to Detroit and gave, I guess, a part or a portion of this I Have a Dream speech. He did that in Detroit. I believe I was there because my uncle was visiting, and we actually went down there, and there were hordes of people in the streets of Detroit during that time. So you have the Civil Rights Movement in full play. You have the Vietnam War in full play, and certainly the 1968 period with the escalation, different campaigns, military campaigns that took place in Vietnam. The protest that was growing, was increasingly growing around 1967, 66, 67, 68, during that time, the escalation of people who were saying, no, this war is not right, it's not moral, we need to get out. All of that was in play. You had backlash to the civil rights movement with bombings and protests and God knows what else was going on. You had the beginning of the women's movement that was taking place during that time. So you had all of these socioeconomic, military activities taking place, and Detroit was one of the many cities where this was being acted out and played out. And so I can remember in 67, I want to go back to 67. In 67, during that time, the draft was in play, and you would literally in 66 and 67, you would see on television, the draft board would come on and they would pull numbers. And you would pray that your relative, your brother, your cousin, your nephew, your son was not called into war. My brother was in college during that time and was not called into war. And we had many discussions about it because it was a very unpopular war, very, very unpopular. So that's the backdrop. I want to give you the backdrop of what was taking place. So with that said, you had Detroit, which was, it was a segregated city. It was a city where I was born into a black hospital, not a poor black hospital, but a black hospital because that's where my family chose to take my mother when she had me, and her doctor, who was black, was the obstetrician, gynecologist obstetrician, and my pediatrician was also, they were all connected in this circle of people who largely lived in middle-class black neighborhoods in Detroit. There were segments and parts and sections of Detroit that had these very strongly entrenched black neighborhoods. And they were entrenched because of the segregation patterns that had gone back to the 30s, again, in response to this wave, this migration wave of people who had come up largely from the South to get employment into Detroit. So that's the backdrop. And that's, again, obviously it could not have been explained in this movie, but I wanted to give you that. My family was very fortunate to be college educated. And what that meant was that they had better opportunities for employment and work than many of my brothers and sisters who had come up the ranks and had no education. And so they had to go to the factories, or they had to do domestic work, they had to do other things. So my immediate family was able to escape that particular route because my parents were both college graduates. My mother was a teacher, my father was a businessman, and we lived in a very strong neighborhood. My grandparents, my grandfather was a pastor of St. Paul AME Church in Detroit. And before he passed away, he paid off the mortgage of a new building that was erected, a very large building. And he was also a very astute businessman. So he had also graduated from college. My grandmother had graduated from college, taught school until she married, and then she didn't work anymore. So, you know, that was my headset. That's the world I grew up in. Now, my other grandmother, yes, she largely couldn't read or write. That was my father's mother. She was a domestic, but she was a very smart businesswoman and saved enough money to buy a home. So I have pieces of that in my family, too. There's no question about that. But my immediate family and my grandparents, who were very much a part of my life, that's the world that I knew growing up at 2414 Atkinson between Linwood and LaSalle, important streets to think about when you think about this movie. And then when my grandfather passed away, then we moved in with my grandmother at 2532 Chicago Boulevard between Linwood and LaSalle. So I literally moved four blocks away in the same neighborhood, one house to the other. My brother, who had been born 4.5 years before me in 1949, grew up, I'm hoping I'm getting this right, on Claremont. I'm pretty sure. Claremont is the street where the riot started. But again, it was in the same general West Side neighborhood. And I'm very fortunate because my parents and my grandparents had done well, and my mother benefited from that, and they didn't have the normal bills that other people had just because of how business had been conducted and property that had been purchased, and it afforded me a very, very comfortable life. So that's the background. But in the sea of this are these other activities and factions that are taking place in Detroit, also in cities like Chicago, also in New York. So it was not just issues that were taking place in the South. You had segregation in the North that were impacting where you could live and where you could go to school. I went to all public schools. My brother went to all public schools. But in the sixth grade, I was actually voluntarily bused with other children. Our parents got together, and they sent us to Vandenberg Elementary School, which is right on the 8 Mile line, and that's the dividing line. That's where the city ends. So I went to school from sixth grade through eighth grade largely with white students and in a very heavy Jewish neighborhood. Prior to that, I had gone to Brady Elementary School in Detroit, again, which had become increasingly black. And the neighborhood that I lived in was increasingly a black neighborhood. So the whole migration pattern of people moving out of the city in the 60s had already taken place. But my home that I lived in on Atkinson was very comfortable. Again, middle-class neighborhood. The home I lived in on Chicago Boulevard, even more comfortable. And if you see the graphic for this today's blog, you'll see a picture of me in 1968. That's the year after the riot. And it was a 6-bedroom, 4-plus bathroom home with an attic area that had been converted to bedrooms and a basement that had a furnace and all that kind of stuff. So, and a side lot. So that's the home I grew up in. So fast forward, July, I believe it's 23rd, 1967, when the riot started. I was 13 years old, and we've pieced this together. I think I was at my cousin's house up the street, and they lived in an apartment complex, beautiful apartment complex. I think I was there spending the night with her, and we were doing girl stuff. And I believe this was a Sunday. I believe we must have not gone to church that day. That was unusual. I was trying to put that together because I went to church every Sunday. My grandmother was still living. My grandfather had passed away. My mother was there. My parents had divorced already. My father was in Africa, and my brother was home from college. He had finished up his first year at Fisk University, and he drove a red sports car. So I believe those are the dynamics that took place during that time. So it's either probably early afternoon, late morning, early afternoon, my brother comes to get me and says, you have to come home now because there's problems taking place in the streets. So I came home, and then what my cousin has reminded me is that she and her mother ultimately came to my house also, probably for safekeeping, clearly. And we all watched from my home the white statue across the street to Sacred Heart Seminary. It was a block-long campus, and it was a seminary for Catholic priests to be trained. And so I remember growing up that just that dichotomy, I mean, just the variety and the diversity even in my own neighborhood, that Catholic seminary, and then watching Jewish people walking on Saturday to their synagogues for worship, and then black people in the neighborhood, and then one of the stores across the street from my home in Chicago that was owned by a Chaldean family. Chaldeans came largely from northern Iraq and Syria and had come decades before and had set up many, many stores in the neighborhoods. So so that's the backdrop of where I live. My next-door neighbors were Greek, and I remember the matriarch of the family, her husband had died years ago, and she always wore black. So my neighbor, my immediate neighbors were white. They were not black. So the neighborhood was just growing and changing. So this particular day on Sunday, we watched that white statue being painted black, the face painted black by some of the rioters. And then we watched rioters literally go and torch the cleaners where my clothes were. They burned up the store across the street from my home. If you see the picture of me at the blog, you'll see that there's a lot, and that was our family lot, and then there was a vacant lot next to that lot, and ultimately that's where the National Guard came and set up shop as they were guarding the neighborhoods. So the cleaners burned to the ground. The drugstore on the corner, same strip of stores, burned to the ground. The Chaldean market, Imperial Market, had a sign in the window that said Soul Brothers, and their store was saved. It was not burned, but all the stores around them, or most of the stores around them, were burned to the ground. There's a very interesting interview by Conrad Mallett, Judge Conrad Mallett, who was my classmate at Cass Tech. He graduated from high school together, and he's become a very prominent man in Detroit. He has done, a very comprehensive job of painting the picture of all the pieces that took place during the riot, in addition to the Algiers Motel tragedy that took place. I will post that link at my website on today's blog so that you can listen to that. It's a C-SPAN. It's about a 43-minute video interview. It's very good, and it'll give you the context of what happened and what went on. So that'll be at my blog once I finish this broadcast. So these stores are up in blaze. There's sniper fire going on everywhere. We are keeping our lights off at night because of the sniper fire. We've got National Guard parked outside our doors, literally, and we are hosing down our houses, literally hosing the houses down, because we hear rumors. Now, remember, there's no computer, there's no text messaging, there's no email. You're hearing this stuff by picking up the phone and calling people or talking to neighbors, et cetera, or watching the news, and we hear that they're coming after the people who live in the Boston Edison area. That's my neighborhood. That's where the black professionals live. That's where the teachers, the doctors, the lawyers, the preachers, that's where they all live. And the homes are large. And I just told you, my home, this home on Chicago Boulevard, had 6 bedrooms, 4 bathrooms, and it was a large house. And these were the homes that were built in the 20s and 30s, again, when the city was growing, when manufacturing was just skyrocketing, and you had a lot of people who were making money, and they were building these large homes that still exist today. So that's the backdrop. So we had to hose down our houses, our lawns, our fences, so that if, in fact, fires started, we at least had a head start to stop the fires as they would start. So we had this kind of dynamic going on where we had rumors that the neighborhood was going to be all burned down, and they burned down a lot of homes, and they were coming after our houses, so we heard. So it was very scary. You did not leave your home. You didn't pack up and go to a motel anywhere. No, you stayed in your houses. You cut the lights off, and you prayed that all would somehow calm itself down after a period of days. This went on from Sunday through Thursday of that week in July in 1967 when I was 13 years old. Now, as a result of that riot, I'm reading this from the Detroit Free Press. They've done a compilation, and because it's the 50th anniversary, they're covering this. It says, the stats startled the world. 43 people died during that episode, 33 African-Americans and 10 whites. 1,189 people were injured. There were 7,231 arrests, of which 14% were white. 2,509 stores looted or burned, like the cleaners, like the drugstore I explained earlier. And fortunately, the Chaldean Imperial Market store was saved because they had that Soul Brothers sign in the window. And 3,034 calls for fire department service. Of all the structures, of all the structure fires, perhaps as many as 27% took place in black-owned businesses, according to historian Sidney Fine. So again, you had the rise of the middle class. You had blacks who had saved enough money to buy businesses, et cetera, and then this episode took their businesses away. In some cases, completely forever. It was scary. It was noteworthy. You didn't know what was going to happen next. And again, I'm 13, so I'm looking at this from the 10-year-old, and you haven't seen anything like this. Now, my mother had seen something like this because there was a riot in Detroit in 1943, but wasn't as widespread as this, because in 1943, blacks were even more contained, more segregated, and located in fewer neighborhoods in the city. So 20-plus years later, you have blacks, and Detroit is a sprawling city. It's spread out in many areas connected by these freeways. So you had more black people living in different parts of the city in 1968 than you had in 1943. So the catastrophe and the destruction was much more so in 67 than 43. But, I mean, the death toll alone, 43 people dead. The movie concentrates on the Algiers Motel situation, which I was not even aware of because, again, I'm thinking about my own neighborhood. It was a true episode. It actually happened. Catherine Bigelow, I think, did a pretty decent job of covering the facts. There were two white women who were at that motel who were terrorized along with the other black residents or customers who were there. Three tragic individuals were shot and killed at that motel by the police. It was police brutality on steroids. It was absolutely horrific. And so I watched that movie. And again, I'm putting this hat on about me living on Chicago Boulevard and seeing what I saw. My brother and I, we've had a conversation, and he said he remembers people in convertibles with, you know, big appliances and a whole lot of stuff in there on the backseat of their cars driving down the street after they had looted stores. So, you know, we have our individual memories, and this movie captures a piece of that particular era and what happened during that era. And yes, three people died at that hotel. And yes, people were injured. And one gentleman who was part of the Dramatics, I think he was the manager of the Dramatics, never really performed or never was a part of the group again. I think their manager was killed. He was one of the three who were killed at the Algiers Hotel. So the incidences definitely took place. And again, it captures the brutality, the raw brutality that took place during that time and police brutality that took place in 1967. what I kept thinking about watching that movie was, oh my gosh, it's horrible watching this. It's hard to watch this. And it's even harder to connect it to what's taking place today and why we have Black Lives Matter and why we have calls of investigations of police departments in Ferguson, Missouri, in parts of New York and New Jersey and North Carolina and in Cleveland when a 12-year-old is shot and killed. And you see these kind of incidences that take place today, what happens today between police and citizens. And you say, I kept saying when I watched the movie last weekend, oh, my goodness, yeah, we've come a long way. We've certainly come a long way, but we still have work to do. We still have an awful lot of work to do. And the movie reminded me of all the work that is still needed in terms of the policing, the community policing, the dialogues that need to take place between police and citizens, and the class divides that conquer us all, the class divides that are stumbling blocks for each and every one of us, the class divides, the socioeconomic class divides that made angry Detroiters want to come to my neighborhood, Boston Edison neighborhood. So that Boston is a street in Detroit. Edison is another street in Detroit. And you count the homes that were in this particular neighborhood. They were larger homes, again, very much like my home, and homes that were even bigger than my homes. And you think about the anger that people had where they wanted to come into other Black neighborhoods and set the houses on fire simply because they were angry and simply because of the socioeconomic dynamics that took place that separated us economically from each other. I mean, this is the beginning of a discussion I'm going to have. I'm actually going to be convening via Zoom conferencing some Detroiters so that we can talk about this. Mayor Ken Reeves, who went to school with my ex-husband in Detroit, I'm going to bring him on the conversation. Marilyn Anderson Chase in Boston. Ken Reeves is the former mayor of Cambridge, Massachusetts. And ironically, this film was shot in Massachusetts. That's what's so mind-boggling about the whole thing. So I want to get some of my buddies from who were born and raised in Detroit, either during that era or after that era, to convene this conversation. I'm going to pull my brother in, pull my cousin in, pull my best friend who's living in, to get her involved so that we can have this ongoing discussion about where Detroit was. And I want to bring Ken Reeves in particular because he convened a symposium about this very subject several months ago, and he is doing some research on it now out of MIT. So I want to talk about this because this is important. It's our past. It was 50 years ago, but it is definitely related to where we are today, whether you are in Detroit or Boston or New York or San Francisco or Atlanta or Houston or Philadelphia. It doesn't make any difference. This subject and this topic and the way we treat each other and the way we connect with each other and with the wider world is how I want to approach this movie, not just looking at what happened at the Algiers Motel, a tragic situation, clearly tragic, but what was the connection with the Algiers Motel on Virginia Park and Woodward Avenue and my house on Chicago Boulevard and someone else's house, maybe that was on Warren Avenue or someone else who lived near 8 Mile? What's the connection between all of us and how we treated each other, how we thought about each other, the larger picture, the larger political landscape that took place during that time, the what the world was seeing, how we were treating the world, all of that, I'm going to have that as part of my conversation. And we'll talk more about it. So just check out my website, carolcopelandthomas.com. You'll find out more about it. We will have the conversation using the movie Detroit as a backdrop for this larger conversation about our societies and our cities today. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Go out and have a great weekend. Thank you. Bye-bye.